Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Gary Stewart at Conscious Connection. Today I'm interviewing Jan Crawford, who just wrote a book that's absolutely fantastic called The Disorderly Soul, Aligning with the Movement of Love. It's absolutely wonderful. Jan's been a specialist working with multi-dimensions of trauma and resolution, which include multi-generational and developmental shock trauma. A former psychoanalyst at the faculty of the Training and Research Institute of Self-Psychology and a graduate of the International Trauma Studies Program of New York University. She's certified to treat and supervise health professionals training in somatic experience trauma work by the Foundation for Human Enrichment. She's also a certified systemic family constellation facilitator by Bert Hellinger in the United States and also Hellinger Scientia in Germany. She's been absorbed in spiritual studies for over four decades and has contributed to a number of books that bridge the fields of psychology and spirituality. And we're going to speak to her today about the disorderly soul. So let me get her on the line, and it's wonderful to interview Jan Crawford.
Hi, Gary.
And how are you?
I'm fine, and thank you so much for inviting me onto your program. I've been looking forward to it.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. You wrote such a wonderful book. I just love to interview cutting-edge authors, and no less we share the same modality for our practice. So it's absolutely wonderful to speak of someone like mind and on a deep spiritual journey to sort their own family system out and their place in it.
Well, I know your book, Many Hearts, One Soul, has been very helpful to me, so I'm pleased if my book's been helpful to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was wonderful. And what I just want to let our readers know, it really was an intimate look at your journey from childhood through everything you brilliantly documented and about your personal journey as a woman. I think any and all of us can learn from that. And we're all wounded souls. And I think the best healers out there, the people who know what proclivities that they had in their journey and can share that with other people is one of the best teaching tools out there.
Well, I think that I have the luxury, and it's, you know, one of the profound luxuries of my life, of being able to have so many teachers to begin to see my profound blindness. And
mm-hmm.
So the book really, I felt like I'm 70 and I find myself in a position when I realized a couple of years ago that I thought somebody should write a book that tracked one human being and the depth of their work with constellation work. And I also had a lot of access to my family history, difficult and good. And I kept thinking, somebody should do that. That's one thing that the brilliant writers so far have touched, some of them, including you, have touched into. But I wondered what a whole book on that order could be, and
yes,
whether it could be of help to people who both didn't know the work and who'd been in the work for some time. And so I turned around and noticed that I was the person that could do that.
Absolutely.
And that I was in the position to do that. So I felt moved to do it more than I wanted to sit and write my family history. I didn't particularly have that goal. What I wanted to do was really show how this work has been and is being so profoundly transforming for me. So I felt like the movement to do this. And so it's made it a little easier versus just deciding for some other reason to do it.
Right, and you just were so succinct. And so just so our listeners know, what do you consider a disorderly soul, and is your soul orderly or disorderly? I think they'll be fascinated to learn about that.
Well, first of all, my soul is more orderly by far than it was in the beginning, and many things have contributed, but profoundly in the last 6 or 7 years, the Hellinger work. And I'm using the word soul, but any word can be used here that identifies what, in the book, I call a specific, the center of our being that has a specific place and purpose in an ordered universe.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Bryson and Ursula Franck just got a new book out, particularly Tom, and they don't use the word soul in their work. They just ask the people they're working with, what is it in your own life experience that has never changed? So insert here any word. I have a Buddhist friend who was a very dear friend and almost couldn't read the book because she was so averse to the word soul. And eventually she found a way around it, and thank God she got something very important for herself from the book. But for me, true nature, whatever you choose to call it, but if
right.
this disorderly, one kind of very personal way to see if your soul is disorderly is something I've found in the last year or two, which is when I now, in constellations and in my inner life, can look into my parents' eyes, each parent's eyes, and see everything that's there. I can see their hurt and the parts of them that are so damaged, and now the absolute clear loving place in them.
Mm-hmm.
And until we can do that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing that really surprised me after both of my parents are passed and I had a very violent childhood. And ironically, after doing Hellinger's work for over 15 years now and being certified for 13 of those 15 as a practicing facilitator, I was stunned at how much love I could see in their eyes, absolutely stunned, because I had this negative, violent, traumatized picture of them as monsters. Uh-huh. And in hindsight now, after doing many personal constellations with my teachers, Hellinger included, just like you with Ciencia, I see, oh my God, there was so much love underneath that violent reaction to the systemic past that they had to endure from my grandparents.
Isn't extraordinary, and it keeps growing. That's what's so
absolutely
thrilling about this. I thought here I might read the poem that is near the beginning of the book because it shows where I was coming from to the kind of place that you and I are describing is still open.
Yeah.
And it's
absolutely
called,
please do. I would love to hear it.
It's called My Mother Waits. And this is a poem I said that if I could have written when I was about 10 or 12 years old, this is probably what I would have said.
Mm-hmm.
My mother waits from a denser galaxy. He is more minefield than one who knows this world or the darkness that is not darkness. And she waits ready to leap longing for something like the dissolving mother she had so very little of. Like so many others, wanting so much her arms can't reach, except in the wrong direction. Her demands more desperate, as against her will, her sorrow, secret, and unjustified shame become more deeply buried in her children's hearts. And I cannot look into her eyes, knowing they will tell me how old pain can be, that I could never do enough, even if I tried. Knowing they will tell me, you are right, I will do anything. So why not let her, no matter the cost to her or to you, at least you'll have that next pretty dress to camouflage your greatest failure, walking out in it into the world in an SF womanhood, severed from the sources, a fragile young monster who had better find a way to love being human.
Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. And so this book is about the way I found to love being human that I'm finding in seeing so many others. And then as a psychotherapist, I later, after describing my constellations, I later talk about how that's very much changed my work.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that Hellinger says of the 100,000 brilliant things that he said is very fundamental. And that is taking our mothers as the fountain of life with everything that flows through her to us. We take our own existence. To the extent we can take our mother, we take our life as a whole. And so what you and I were talking about earlier, I think, is this incredible, inexhaustible resource that our hurt and our images of our parents were obstacles to receiving. So my book is very candid and very raw about how I ask too much from my partners, how, like most people, unfortunately, how I needed too much from my spiritual teachers. And I think this is not an uncommon experience, is why I wrote about it.
Yeah, and the other thing is, do we, you know, being a huge fan of Hellinger myself, do we seek the perfect mother? Because in some ways we reject on a subtle level because of our negative, especially where you're a trauma specialist, we reject because of the pain that happened directly with our parental lineage. Do we look for mothers elsewhere, the perfect guru, the perfect teacher, the perfect lover, and how it will never substitute or take away the original pain or frozen needs of that little child who didn't get their needs met?
And the disappointment, I mean, I think with so many of my clients, what I work with now, is the profundity of the disappointment.
Yes.
And, you know, as you and I and so many other people all around the world are finding, is there is an actual source of love, too. And I just recently had a new constellation about my father, where for the very first time I could feel a deeper level of, but it's very interesting. It isn't just that I experience them being loving toward me in a way that I can begin to receive, that I couldn't see that in my father. And I think this is really important for people who do constellations and or are helpful to a friend or whatever, is that I couldn't see that until I could accept, in my adult part of me was ready to accept more of him, and then he saw that, and then he began to know who I was from the representation. Same thing with my mother. It wasn't just about the child and me saying, oh, my mommy loves me, or my daddy loves me. I mean, that was a part of it. But the huge things opened, and also, as you might remember from my book, with my maternal grandfather, which is one of the two scandals of the book, and two tragic stories in the book, that until I saw him for 1 second, and he was, I didn't know him. He died 7 years after I was born, and he was sent to San Quentin as a pedophile and was the excluded one from that family line. And and it's very hard for people to understand until they do some of this work, but his becoming included back in our family, in a, he had lost his rights in the family by things he had done.
Right.
And this is Susie Tucker's brilliant insight. But he never lost his place. And something about my generation and my situation was able to see something about him for a second, literally a split second. And he, we ended up sobbing in each other's arms, the representative and I. And that was one of the major excluded ones, but it had a lot to do with my being able to see that, for that to happen, and which all the other constellations had led to my being able to see it, like seeing him as a child that too at his mother's side when she was dying of gangrene and she couldn't look at him. Anyway, I've thrown a lot into this.
But that's his severe trauma. And, you know, for people that aren't familiar with constellations, we look at the bigger destiny and bigger fates of our ancestors. So even though that happened to your grandfather, whatever the forces were that led him to pedophilia or whatever, he also was so much more of a human being. We tend to just categorize people by, let's say, their dirty deed or whatever. We don't realize there's a whole being there experiencing life and maybe good or bad ways. But what I tell everyone in my work is every perpetrator was a victim first. And we have to find compassion for the part of them that was victimized before they exhibited a perpetrator reaction. So they're still as deeply wounded as anyone else. And unfortunately, our society judges sexuality as the most evil thing anyone can do. But there's much more of a human being there.
And I think I could not do that because of his injuries to my mother, which then were passed down unintentionally to me, until I could literally see these things laid out by representatives who were picking up aspects of this, that this never would have happened, I think, because I couldn't just develop compassion for him. I was so enraged with him. in the Constellations in the beginning because of all, he had 13 children and all the damage that came down from, you know, and his wife died and left 13 children homeless. And so it was beyond my, and I had done a billion years of spiritual work and compassion work, couldn't do it until I literally could see this in front of me. And so that's part of what I feel is so extraordinary about mm-hmm. this work. For many of us who can't otherwise access, we may think we're accessing compassion, and then there, mm-hmm. buried in that deep image, is still a lot of rage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I find is when I work with people, women specifically, who, or even men, I get men with sexual abuse, what I'm finding over and over again, it's safer, number one, in a constellation for our listeners, we wouldn't use the actual ancestor who may be dead. We use a representative to be that grandfather or that uncle or that abuser from the client's childhood. And what I'm amazed over and over and over again is the deep love and sadness that they love someone so much, they trusted them, they allowed them to take advantage of their body, whatever. And even though the trauma is there, every time in the constellation, they are so beklemmed over the amount of love they still have for this alleged perpetrator.
Yeah.
So there's a divine paradox there, that there's even love amidst the trauma, and we try to flake away just the trauma side of it so they can regain their aspect of love in their own heart, which might have closed down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it, the surprise of love is what's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Like for me to see my mother in a constellation, and my mother on the surface level loathed her father, and he had attacked her. I mean, he had attacked a number of people. And but to see her later, as the constellations unfold, and that's there are a number of them in the book, step by step, to see her want to go sit in her father's lap, you know, that there, that the child always wants that, and to see that in constellations they often had a protector because my grandfather was confused. When the protector mm-hmm. was there, my mother could then go closer. But
right.
all of these were steps, and when I could see my mother loving her father, it also helped me give up some of my rage at him. But that's one of the significant stories in the book. There's also, and I won't go into it now, but my father had a deep scandal and lost his father when he was two, and that I didn't know about till more recently. So there's something very, I think, beautiful in that story, as difficult as both these stories of my parents are, because I think, for one thing, one was about sexual abuse, and there are 700,000 registered sex offenders in this country, and that means the families and generations behind them. There are millions of us that are affected by
right.
just the
mm-hmm.
one story, even, that I was talking about. And so it's... it feels wonderful to see one story reconciled so other people may get some sense of how they might find reconciliation about the
mm-hmm.
story. And most people
yeah,
don't even know they're being affected by it, but some of us
right,
know.
Exactly. And the intergenerational effect as well, that it might not happen in their generation, but it comes through as a judgment or a hatred or a phobia that they're not even realizing the root. And what I find in the work that I do, it seems around 1890, the turn of the century in our great-grandparents' generation, I wish I could go back in a time machine and see what the sexual values were back then, or the societal repression about sexuality, because it seems a lot of it started in our great-grandparents' generation. And I want our listeners to know, in constellations, we don't reject perpetrators. We embrace them because there's a lot of hidden love there, and a lot of the treasures that were lost because of trauma can be regained by embracing that. And it doesn't mean we're saying go out and be a perpetrator. It's saying let's look at the multidimensional aspect of the reactions that ancestor had, so they're not demonized and excluded, but embraced, so we can find that love that was in there despite the unfortunate fate or destiny of that particular person.
Right, and it goes even further that if I, whoever I'm rejecting, if I'm rejecting my perpetrator grandfather, then I'm playing out some of that energy myself, not necessarily
right.
in a sexual way. But if I'm not, then my nephew is or someone else is.
Right.
So not only do we access the love, but we end the replaying on some level of that. And that's a huge
right.
relief. But I think the reason partly that I wrote this book is that not only do we have disorder, most of us have, maybe all of us have disorderly souls to one degree or another, but we're a disorderly country. We're out of place as a country. We've lost our center, and many countries have. And that until we can find some of these true centers in ourselves, that I think it's very difficult for us to help our country find
mm-hmm.
those also. That we either mm-hmm. make ourselves bigger than other, like in our families, I made myself much bigger than I actually was in my lineage. And
yeah.
We make ourselves bigger as a country often than we are in the lineages and the places, or oppositely, you know, smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's such a microcosm for we're not going to be able to do a whole hell of a lot until we find our better places again back in our families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where
yeah.
you also, I know your shamanism comes in, that there were people before, people in this country and other countries before who knew their places better and were
yeah.
more aligned with the greater forces than I think we are.
Yes, and the Native American, the indigenous populations were so humble that they were given the gift of this paradise to survive in, you know, until the pale faces came and changed everything. And I wanted to make sure we cover, we have about 8 minutes left here, so I want to do some promo at the end of how to contact you and get your book. But what do you see as the implications for this book, The Disorderly Soul, on Western psychology or those who are involved in psychotherapy as either clients or clinicians?
I think they're huge. And one of them is, another thing that Hellinger said is, don't see a therapist who doesn't love their mother. And so part, for me, this book is part of confession. In a sense, I didn't love my mother as fully as I do now and had a lot of obstacles with her. And so for many years, I think I listened too empathically too long to the stories that are only on the surface level. It's very important, obviously, for a therapist or a counselor or a friend to hear the hurt that somebody is experiencing. But I called one of my chapters of my book The Difficult Therapist, because therapists often talk about the difficult client. But in the sense that after a point, I really am dedicated to the whole family, and that I refuse after a point to accept the only reality as being the reality of, for example, I had a guy come in recently, and I asked him two words to describe his mother, and he said, she's weak and annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know, and I learned more about his history, and there were great difficulties there and great things. But she was also a single mother who got them through countries of violence and out of those countries.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
so I always hold that reality at the same time as the more surface layer of real horror that can happen in families. And I think it's so important that we be careful that we're not empathic too long to the surface story. That's one thing.
Mm.
I talk also in the book, and I think this will interest some people, about I kind of suggest that baby developmental theory is wrong.
mm-hmm.
And wrong in the sense that we the traditional developmental theory says you start with separation, individuation. And I make a radical suggestion that we never have to separate, and that spiritual development, it's so funny, you're supposed to sit on a cushion for 20 years to have union, and
right.
psychological theory is you should separate, you know, from the moment that you're born, that of course we need to individuate, and I propose a whole other kind of more expanding life, but the theory that we are totally separate beings, it's not useful.
mm-hmm.
And it was kind of fun to write that part of the book. But that, you know, we're always in some state of union, and we have from my viewpoint, we have a local self, you know, which is the particle, and a more wave self, which is non-local. But there, you know, many ways, and that's more to deal with people who are thinking, or everyone's on a spiritual path, I think, but who are more consciously on a spiritual path. So that may be provocative in terms of making some few little suggestions. That was said tongue-in-cheek to Western psychology. There's much more, but you said we had 8 minutes, so I think that's all I could probably say about it. Except that the last thing about trauma, which is the biggest trauma, is our deep inner separating images from our parents. We can be hit by trucks. We can be in wars. We can be whatever. And I do something called somatic experiencing. So you work with that in the nervous system in important ways. But the overlooked sometimes trauma is if we're holding rigidified, concretized versus flowing complex images of our parents, that's the deepest trauma. And so it's very exciting that we can begin to work with those in these new and very old kind of ways.
Yes, and that's Peter Levine's work you do with the trauma, the somatic experiencing.
Right.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Well, we have just a couple more minutes, and literally 4 minutes here. Would you like to speak about the frozen inner images of our parents or your personal obstacles if we have time?
Well, I think in a way my poem that I read earlier was some of the frozen images. For me, my mother was very frightening because her needs were so great. But in the course of pulling away from her, I became kind of a selfish brat. And my father was very frightening for other reasons. And facing kind of my own... I'm writing a poem about this right now, about facing my own brutality and my own tenderness you said, and you quoted Bird in your book on guilt, the perpetrator cannot be exonerated by asking for forgiveness. So I can't ask my parents for forgiveness, but what I have done is begin to recognize who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And recognize how much is there that my images wouldn't allow me to see. And you also, in quoting Bert, said guilt helps us grow, and losing our innocence leads us to growth. So in my book, I'm really talking about losing my innocence. I was not the innocent one always in relationships. I was not the innocent one sitting for 30 years talking to therapists about, you know, the failures of my parents. It was much more complex. And to own, and the poem I'm writing right now is about racism, and to begin to see what I really am not innocent about racism, for example, is a great freedom. It's very difficult to face, and it's a great freedom. So maybe that's the last thing. I have, you know, many things I love to talk about, but perhaps leaving it there, because I know we must be very... much nearer.
Yes, we're very close to the end here. Yes, yes. Well, it's been absolutely wonderful to speak to you, and I look forward to seeing you at the conference in Seattle in a week or so. And I just want to let our listeners know for the last minute, this is Conscious Connection with Gary Stewart, and I've been speaking to Jan Crawford. Now, she can be contacted directly at jcrawford4000@gmail.com. And her book is available in paperback and on Kindle at amazon.com. And I will put that on our social network link on Facebook and elsewhere, LinkedIn, with our show link as well, so you can listen to her speak about this fantastic book she wrote called The Disorderly Soul. It's also available on the... And Jan, I want to thank you so much. I'll put all the contact information so our listeners don't have to worry about how to contact you or get your wonderful book here. It's been an honor to speak to you, and I look forward to seeing you at the conference. And I just love the depth and intimacy that you bring to the discussion on healing our own souls. Then we can go forth and help others once we've been through our own spiritual mud, so to speak.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Gary. Thank you again for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. And in about 15 minutes, we'll have it blasted on social networks. So thank you. And namaste. And till next time, my listeners out there, thank you so much. This is Gary Stewart with Conscious Connection and my fantastic author, Jan Crawford. With till next time, namaste.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.